Welcome to the Profitable Audience Podcast. Today we are going to talk about search engine optimization. Now, Google has started emphasizing some major factors that are going to be a part of the rankings in the coming months. So I think it's worth talking about in addition to the steps that we actually take to rank our content in search.
So I think the challenge in this episode is to make it a little bit entertaining and to keep people awake, because I think it can be a little bit boring at times, although super important. How much traffic does your website get from search? Like, what percentage?
Probably like 78%, okay. Approximately.
Approximately? That does not sound approximate. You're like
78.25%. 77.8% approximately.
In March, but who's counting? Okay, yeah, so mine's in the like high 30s. That's okay. More of an approximation, but still pretty critical. That and Pinterest are my two top traffic drivers.
I'm going to start off this episode with a rant.
Okay.
Okay, because I spent, so we're going to talk about Core Web Vitals first, and yep. I'll talk to you guys about what this is in a sec, but I literally spent 4 weeks trying to fix my site because there's very little documentation, and I had to just really think outside the box, do my research, and figure out how to fix these issues on my site. And I'm thinking to myself, if it's taken me 4 weeks, and I'm not trying to brag about myself here, but if it takes me 4 weeks, how can someone who's not technical at all possibly get these things right?
I agree. And I think too, like, you eat, breathe, sleep SEO. I mean, that is your core web traffic. And so the fact that you spent 4 weeks on it, to someone who is not as invested in SEO as you are, it seems like an impossibility.
I mean, you know, oftentimes Google will make these announcements that these are going to be a part of the search rankings. But in fact, later on, it's not that big of a deal. But I'm not sure if this is anecdotally true, because there's been Google updates since I made these fixes. But my rankings actually have gone up since I made these changes to fix my Core Web Vitals, which implies to me that they've already been a part of the rankings.
Before we get into the riveting Core Web Vitals, which you are going to make fun and exciting for everybody, can you just do a 30-second for people who maybe are not super familiar with SEO, what it means?
What it is, basically?
Yeah.
Basically, SEO stands for Search Engine Optimization. It's basically how you rank in Google search. And once you rank, it's always a good source of free traffic. That's what's appealing about it to me.
Right, because it's not, we talk about social media traffic where you might get a quick bump, but then you immediately drop off after. If you have something go viral on Facebook, you'll get traffic for a day, but then after that, you won't really get a lot of traffic. Whereas with search, chances are, if you're ranking on the first page of Google, you're not going to drop off the first page of Google after 2 to 3 days. You're going to stay there for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I've had posts that have ranked for nearly a decade now, actually, and it hasn't really moved, despite all the updates and everything like that. What's appealing about it to me is you can spend a lot of time up front and then reap the rewards later, as opposed to something like social media that you mentioned, where you have to be posting multiple times every single day.
All right. And I will say, just as a little, because we're going to do another podcast on Pinterest traffic. And I want to say that, just if you're listening to this episode, a lot of the principles are the same, actually, because I'm working on the slides for our talk tonight on Pinterest. But a lot of the principles are the same when it comes to search. So I think this, you can take some of the stuff in this episode and apply it to Pinterest. You can apply it to YouTube. So it's bigger than just your content on your website.
I'm just curious, should we start out with the basics, or should we just jump into the thing that's going to happen in the coming months?
Maybe we should start with the basics.
Should we start with the basics?
Yeah. Okay. Maybe just a quick overview.
We'll do a quick overview, and then we'll get into maybe a little bit more depth after what's going to be changing. You know, at a base level, if you guys want to be serious about ranking and search, I think number one is you have to get a good keyword tool. And what is a keyword tool? It's basically a tool that tells you exactly what people are searching for on Google and how many times that they're searching for on Google, and basically how easy it is to rank for a certain keyword on Google. Unless you have a keyword tool, you're basically flying blind, because it's almost, I don't want to say it's impossible to guess what people are searching for, but it is very difficult.
Okay, so what, we use Ahrefs.
Right.
But there are a couple other tools. Ahrefs is, I don't know if it's how it compares to SEMrush, because they're both a little bit more expensive, but there are some cheaper tools out there.
So I would put Ahrefs and SEMrush in the same class. I just like Ahrefs better because there's more options and there's more features, although I would say it's probably not graphically as user-friendly as SEMrush.
Okay, sounds about right for you.
Yeah, I always like control and bells and whistles.
Okay, so if we don't want to spend $100 a month.
Right, those tools are $100 a month. If you don't want to spend those, like Neil Patel has a tool called Ubersuggest, which I think he's trying to break into this game. I don't think it's as good, but it is significantly cheaper, and they have a free tier, which makes it attractive.
And that, I think, what is like $14 a month, I think, for their basic tier.
I can't remember
tier.
How much it is. He keeps changing the prices. Like, yeah. It was free completely for a while, and now he's starting to, you know, start charging. So,
but it's definitely much lower price. And the other one that we talk about is Longtail Pro.
Right. Longtail Pro is our friend Spencer's old tool. It was like the old leader in the space. And, you know, since then, it's been overtaken by Ahrefs and SEMrush. But it's a very economical tool. I think it's like $30 a month.
Yep.
It doesn't do as much, but, you know, if you're on a budget, it's still a pretty good tool.
I have a question about the tools really quickly, because we both use Ahrefs. And I find that when I get into Ahrefs, and I'm not an SEO expert by any means, I find sometimes when I get into there, I'm just overwhelmed with the amount of information that is available to me. And then I just want to give up.
Yeah, it is complicated. And if you want to use all the features, like I'm probably using maybe 50% of the features that the tool offers.
Right.
And even that's still overwhelming. But what I like about it, in reality, the only numbers you really need are the search volume and the difficulty. And what's cool about it is it tells you what all your competitors are ranking for and what they're going for. And they can compare them to your site. And so you can always have more content ideas. I mainly use it as an idea generator now, actually, for the content that I want to write.
Interesting. Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah. So with that, what you want to do at a very basic level is, let's say you want to write about, so I'm an e-commerce, right? So I write about e-commerce. I might want to just type in e-commerce or Amazon into this tool. And what it does is it spits out all the different permutations of keywords that people are actually searching for that particular topic, right? So just as an example, merch by Amazon is a topic that, believe it or not, is actually not that competitive of a term. So that means it's rankable. And it actually tells you how strong your website is. Ahrefs will tell you how strong your website is. And if your website is stronger, that means you can go after some of the more difficult keywords.
Okay. So if you're newer.
And if you're newer, you're going to have to go for these keywords that are not as competitive. They might have less search volume, but they're not competitive at all. And you can often rank even with a site that's just brand new.
Okay. So that's a good foundation, is using a tool to come up with terms that you want to write about and rank for.
I think that's par for the course today, honestly.
Yeah.
So once you have that keyword, then, you know, the hard part obviously is putting out the content, but you're going to want to use that keyword in the title, which is probably the most important place. And then you just want to write a very comprehensive article. I always look at the front page for what's ranking on that for that keyword. And I try to, you know, basically write something that's better than what's out there. It doesn't have to be long. It just needs to be better. And it has to be catchier, because there's other things that Google takes into account in terming the rankings also. So for example, is someone just going to your article and then just leaving right away? I mean, that's a negative sign to Google that your article isn't that good. If you can get people to stay on your article for a long time, Google Chrome just happens to be the most popular browser in the world right now. And Google, and maybe people don't even know this, but Google is constantly gathering data about your surfing habits anonymously, but they know how much time people are spending on a given page because you're sending that information to them through the browser. And so they know. And so those metrics on how long people are staying on certain pages, Google takes into account when ranking a page.
Okay, so what are some other factors that Google takes into account?
I mean, there's just so many factors. I mean, backlinks is still big. And if you guys don't know what a backlink is, this is when someone else links to your site or page from a different website. Probably the most important ranking factor is how relevant your article is to that particular search query. And just as an example, let's say you want to write about shades. Right? So shades can have a number of different meanings. It could be the shades that cover your windows. It could be the sunglasses that you wear. So if you just type in shades up front, it's important to figure out what Google expects to rank for a certain keyword. So in the case of shades, let's say I type that in and it's all window shades. Well, that means it's going to be much harder for me to rank for shades if I'm talking about sunglasses, if that makes sense.
Okay, so how do you fix that?
So you target different keywords.
Okay.
Like you have to look to see what Google expects. Here's another example. Let's say you type in a keyword, handkerchiefs, right? and out comes only content pages on handkerchiefs. Well, that means it's going to be a lot harder to rank an e-commerce store for mm-hmm. that keyword as opposed to a content site. So you have to understand what Google is expecting for a certain keyword and make sure you don't kind of diverge from that, because that's what people are expecting to see.
And you're doing this research just directly in the Google browser.
That's correct. Once I have that keyword, I just type it in Google and figure out what comes out. And if it's not what I expect or not what I was planning to write about, then I move on.
So basically, if you're a newer site, you want to target these lower competition words or terms.
Right.
You want to find out what posts are already ranking and write a better, more comprehensive, more entertaining post, I guess.
I think the way you have to think about writing is there's so many companies now that just pay these writers to put out this really bland content. Mm-hmm. I think if you put your personality into it and you make it opinionated and you have a very attractive and clickable title with the keyword in it, that's your best bet for ranking.
Okay.
And then, of course, there's backlinks. But when it comes to generating backlinks, if you have something that's shareable, the backlinks will come. But there's also ways to get backlinks, which when I think about getting backlinks, it's more of like social engineering. At this point, like you have to really get to know other webmasters and work together with other ones. It's all about relationships today.
So what are some things, if you're a newer site, that you that people might be tempted to do that would actually hurt their SEO?
Paying for backlinks. You absolutely never want to do that. Or just paying for these services that guarantee top rankings. Mm-hmm. I would never actually hire any sort of SEO person to run my SEO.
We're friends with SEO people.
We are. I might hire a consultant, okay. But I would never hire someone to just grow my site naturally through SEO, if you know what I mean. Which means like building backlinks for me or writing content on my site or that sort of thing. In order to do that at scale, you have to pay a ton of money because it's a lot of work and it requires a lot of thought. Mm-hmm. So never do that. Never put out any crappy content. And we always joke about this. Like when we first got started, we'd put out like what we were eating that day or what we did that day.
I mean, I think I only did that, but I like how you use we. That's very kind of you.
So if you're going to write something, make sure it's good. And if you have like bad content on your site already, make sure you eliminate it because Google will look at your website as a whole. I always use the analogy of running a restaurant with a menu. You don't want customers, like you don't want to put everything you can possibly make on your
menu. You don't want the Cheesecake Factory.
You know, that's true, actually. There's some dishes on there. Like if I ordered once, like I would never want to go back to that restaurant had I ordered that.
Yeah. So don't be the Cheesecake Factory.
Menu. Yeah, don't be the Cheesecake Factory.
Be the sushi bar.
Only put steak Diane and chicken. what's my favorite chicken dish there? I can't even remember. But so, and then the last thing that Google's been kind of focusing on very lately is what is called the user experience. They've been cracking down on this. I don't know if you guys have ever just surfed the web and you found these sites like the 10 greatest females of all time or whatever. And then you have to click and then the screen like moves all over the place mm-hmm. trying to get you to click on an ad. But and then each page is a separate one where you have to actually hunt and peck for the next button, right? Google is trying to crack down on pages that offer a poor user experience. And the way they break that down, this is what the Core Web Vitals is all about. All the latest news about search has been related to these Google Core Web Vitals. I'm just going to define them for you. They use complicated language for something that's very simple to explain, which is something that Google does all the time for some reason. So the first one is largest contentful paint. Basically, that's just like a fancy word for how long does a site take to load, right? Okay. So you got to improve your page speed. And then there's first input delay, which in reality is like how soon can you actually interact with the site? Like how soon is it like fully loaded enough so you can actually do something on the site? And then finally, the final fantasy term is cumulative layout shift. That has to do with the last thing that we talked about where the screen's moving up and down.
Right.
So those are the three factors that are going to go into effect very soon, if not already. I think they're already active personally in the rankings, but those are going to be a part of the search rankings.
So you know what I found out yesterday from you? That I did not know, or maybe I didn't.
Yesterday.
I found out yesterday, from you. Well, I found out it a couple weeks ago, but I was reminded of it yesterday, that Google actually has real people evaluating your site, which humans. I always thought there was just like a computer program that they ran everything through and just spit out answers or, you know, ranks, whatever.
You know, you're a big Alexa fan, right? Or a Google Home fan?
I am. Well, I mean, kind of. I have one.
You know that they have humans listening, right? For quality.
On the Alexa?
Yeah.
Like in my house, they're just listening to what I'm talking about?
I mean, it's anonymously, but they have people. I don't know necessarily your house, but they have people listening to measure the quality of how it works, right? They got caught for leaking a lot of this stuff.
I feel sorry for whoever has to listen to mine.
Well, the point is I think there was something in the news where they were able to solicit those records to arrest somebody, I think, once, right? It was used as evidence.
Uh-oh. I got to watch what I say in my kitchen.
Well, the point is that every service, you can't rely 100% on computers. You always have to have humans to kind of rate the level of service. So, yeah, there are actually human raters that, you know, if your site's even remotely popular, eventually a human will see it. Mm-hmm. And they'll assign a rating based on what Google calls EAT, expertise, authority, and trust. And they'll give your site a rating based on how authoritative it is, right?
Yeah.
So that's important. Like if you're writing a post, it's important to like include your name and your credentials because these human raters are going to be looking and giving your site a score based on how trustworthy it seems. Right. And if you go to a site that talks about finance, for example, and it's an anonymous writer, well, guess what? That's not going to be very authoritative, right? Because there's no credibility for that
material. Okay, so what about sites like mine where, you know, I write about DIY and recipes and it's such a lifestyle blog? Like, where do I gain my authority then? Because obviously you can't have a degree in lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, authority is just something you build over time. And based on your content, they'll actually look through your site and they'll look at your credentials and what you've done and make a determination that way. It's qualitative. It's not like a quantitative rating, right? So for example, in your case, they'll see all your awesome blueberry muffins and all those recipes.
I was just waiting for some muffin reference.
Yeah.
They'll be like, I don't like blueberries. Next.
And then they might look at your bio and you've been featured in all these magazines and whatnot, right? And they'll be like, okay, yeah, Tony's pretty authoritative in this space and she clearly knows what she's doing. So you'll get good marks.
So that's a good... that's a good case for making sure that you include that social proof either on your homepage or your about page if you have done any like media or been featured or guest posted. I mean, it sounds like that's where you'd want to put that in there so that would be obvious.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, any sort of press that you have, you might even want to have a press page where you actually link to places where you've been mentioned. That's actually on my list of to-dos. I don't have that right now. But I have been lately doing a better job of bragging about myself, I guess. So like on my podcast page, I say now that like I'm in the top 20 for in iTunes for my podcast and marketing. I mentioned all my press mentions and all that stuff for sure.
I just wrote that down on my list to do.
Yeah.
That's a good
one. Is it getting longer or shorter, your to-do list?
It got shorter and now it's getting longer again, but that's okay. That's a good one. That's kind of a no-brainer. That takes you an hour, or unless you're like wanting to redesign your homepage. I know you put stuff on your homepage, but if you just put it on your about page, that does not take very long at all.
Yeah. So these days, also, if you guys are just starting a brand new site, in general, it's going to be much harder to rank a site that has to do with finance, or health, or anything that Google calls YMYL, which is your money, your life. Right. Okay. So anything that has a material impact on your life, it's going to be a lot harder to rank for unless you have some sort of authority. So authority can be built, like with your site, it was built, or you can have credentials. Like let's say I have an MD in physical therapy or something. Obviously, I'm going to be much more authoritative in that space as opposed to just a random person who happens to work out and gives that advice.
Yeah. Although it's interesting, I just saw this, I think it was a TikTok or Instagram yesterday that said, and of course, this isn't about Google, but it made me think how it's a weird positioning because the thing said, I don't want to learn how to get in shape from someone whose full-time job is to get in shape. I want to learn how to get in shape from someone who has a full-time job and is also able to get in shape. Right?
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw that and I thought, that's so true. I don't need someone who literally gets to work out 8 hours a day to tell me how to get in shape. That's not realistic. I want someone who has a job and kids and has a life to tell me how I can get in shape because I only have 45 minutes a day. But that seems like for the opposite for Google, right? Because obviously if you're a certified personal trainer or maybe a PA or not PA, a PT, like then you would have the authority in Google. But I don't know, as a consumer.
I mean, that's just one aspect of it. And I'm just thinking of like Steve Kam of Nerd Fitness. I mean, he's not like a certified trainer or anything, but that's like one of the most popular fitness sites in the world.
Yeah. Anyway, something to think about.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So there's all these factors that we're talking about, but they all come together. And I think Google says that there's like hundreds of ranking factors. I mean, it all forms like one big cohesive story in the end.
Yeah.
So don't get discouraged, but yeah.
Can you talk about EAT just a little bit, EAT just a little bit more?
EAT?
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to EAT soon, right? Isn't it lunchtime for you? Yeah. So expertise, authority, and trust. We kind of already talked about a lot of these things already. I mean, if you are going to be talking about stuff like finance and whatnot, in order to rank, it'll take you longer to rank because if you don't have that authority, you have to take the time to establish it, either through backlinks or people that endorse you, or you have some sort of credential.
Yeah. So if right? you're new, I guess I'm thinking if you're newer, maybe you've just started out with your content site within the past year, what is like, if you said this is one thing you should do to sort of improve that, what would you tell somebody to do? One action that they could take.
One action? I mean, brag about yourself for sure. Put all your credentials down. Make sure that's visible, like your author bio on every single post that you write in case one of these human raiders hits your site.
Okay.
And I would just be very opinionated about what I'm writing about, right? And just demonstrate that expertise in my writing. It's very important that you don't cite any false information. So if you're going to name like statistics or whatnot, make sure you actually, this is counterintuitive, just make sure you link out to actually a good study on that. If you start spouting out statistics without any basis, I think if a human rater sees that, they're going to be like, okay, maybe this guy doesn't know what he's talking about, or maybe he's making up the numbers.
Right. Okay, speaking of linking out, how can that hurt you?
Linking out can hurt you if you're linking out to bad websites. But if you're linking out to well-known and authoritative sites, then that's okay. And in fact, if you're quoting statistics, it's actually encouraged for you to do that.
And when you link out, should you use a follow link or a no-follow link?
If you're linking out to something authoritative, you can just leave the link as normal.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason I ever use no follow links, actually, there's new terms now. Like if you're, let's say someone's paid you to write about a certain product, I think there's like a rel equals, I can't remember
no
what
follow.
The term.
It's just no follow.
No, there's a new special advertising one.
Oh, is there one? Okay.
Yeah. And then there's also, this is too complicated. No one, you guys don't need to worry about this. But there's also like if you run a forum or if there's people commenting on your page, there's like a new rel UGC, which stands for user generated content.
Okay.
So in case they say something, I mean, it's not it's just an indication to Google that it's not really your own.
Right. It's
writing.
The content
right.
put in by other people. Yeah. Okay. So basically, if you're quoting a reputable source or linking to a reputable source, you want how do people know? I mean, obviously, we know certain sources are reputable if you're linking to, you know, Forbes or something like that. But is there a way for someone to check? Maybe it's an obscure statistic and they find it on a website. How does someone check that?
I'm always very careful about it.
Yeah.
So I will try to do my due diligence and make a like gut determination. Like if it's something I've never heard about before, you can really just Google that site and just figure out if other people are talking about them. Like, so for example, like if someone were to hop onto one of my articles, and they were like, oh man, this guy Stevie's full of it. But then he started Googling me and noticed that I was mentioned in all these e-commerce publications and everything, and as well as like Forbes, you know, Wall Street Journal, all that stuff. Then you might go, okay, well maybe, you know, if all these sites are linking to him, maybe he does know what he's talking about.
I like the subtle humble brag drop that you just did. You know,
I
like Forbes,
the best.
Wall Street Journal.
I like how you always drop that you stayed in Cinderella's castle. I mean, that's.
I don't have to drop it anymore. You do it enough.
Oh, God. You're right. I just did you a favor
just
there.
Just did it again.
Well played. Well played.
Yes. Okay. What else we got?
What else we got? Should we talk about solutions? I don't know.
Sure. Sure.
Let's talk about what Google's changing, that core web vitals that we just talked about. Let's talk about page speed. A lot of people, you know, if you asked me this question a year ago, I would have said, don't worry about page speed at all. Don't even bother because there's tons of sites ranking. And if you go, there's like Google has this page speed tool. It's called Page Speed Insights that will give you a ranking from 0 to 100, how your site looks, like speed-wise and those metrics that we discussed. And a year ago, you know, Google's been hinting at page speed being a factor for a very long time. But if you look at the top ranking pages, a lot of them are in the red, right?
Yeah.
They're considered slow. And it's only recently that I think you at least just need to be in the yellow. Like yellow, I think you're just neutral and that's fine. Because a lot of people waste a lot of time trying to fix their page speed. And as long as you're in the yellow, you're okay. If you're in the red, you might need to do something about it. The other thing I just want to also mention is that Google is doing everything mobile first these days. And so your mobile site, and this is counterintuitive because most people, when they work on their websites, they look at it on their laptop or their desktop and they neglect mobile. So make sure that you browse your site on mobile and make sure that it's fast on mobile.
So it's about fast? Is it about speed or user experience?
It's both,
or both,
actually.
Okay.
It's both. Like, I'm just trying to think. I just did a website critique for a student and the desktop site looked great. But when I went on mobile, like their header image took up 3/4 of the page, right? Mm-hmm. On the front page. Stuff like that. It was very clear that they had not surfed their website on mobile.
Okay. So I'm hesitant to even say this, but is there like a plugin anyone can use to optimize their site for mobile, or is this something that has to be done manually?
It's not a plugin. It's more built into your theme.
Okay.
You know, these days I want to say it's par for the course. So yeah, Almost every theme is going to be responsive. So as long as you kind of have like a modern theme that was built in like the last couple of years, you're fine, I think, in this department for the most part.
Yeah.
What is not fine is how quickly your site loads. So most publications these days have a lot of images. And the problem with images is that they're usually the slowest loading factors on your site, right? So you'd never want to load an image up in the browser until someone actually can see it, right? So like some of your articles have like 20 images
right
in it, right?
Yeah.
And if you tried to load up all those 20 images on a page load, it would literally take probably like a minute to load all those, right?
Yep.
So instead, what Tony does is she only loads the image that's visible, and that greatly increases your page load speed.
Decreases it.
You're right. Decreases.
Yeah. Improves it.
And it's especially on mobile, right? There's not a whole lot of screen real estate. So in reality, to fix your mobile speed, you just don't load up only one image probably is on being displayed at any given time.
Yeah.
To fix the cumulative layout shift is a different story. WordPress is actually pretty terrible about this because this is something relatively new. And Google, for some reason, they always expect everyone's website to conform to their policies because they have so much clout in the search.
Because
right?
They run the world.
Yes. And the reason why it was so difficult for me to fix my site was because I used Google's tool and it told me that I had a perfect score all across the board. The problem is that Google, when they rank your site, they measure real-world data.
Okay.
Right? So they have Chrome browsers on all the phones and all the desktops, and there's always people on really slow connections where, you know, it might not be obvious. Like, we're on really fast broadband connections, so even, like, small shifts are indetectable. But when you get someone, like, in maybe, like, a third-world country browsing on a really slow connection, some of these things are more pronounced. So what Google does not tell you is that cumulative layout shift, and just as a review, that's when like the screen moves up and down as it's loading. That is a measure of not just when your page loads, but when someone is like browsing your site. So what the tool doesn't tell you, like the testing tool that they give you, that testing tool is only the page load, like what's seen like above the fold when your page loads. It does not measure these metrics as you scroll up and down the page. So the way I found my site after ripping my hair out for like 4 weeks was that I started browsing. I had to slow down my connection to super slow. And then I started like browsing my site and I had this Chrome plugin called Core Web Vitals, which was telling me when these things were happening. And I would just literally scroll up and down my page. And finally, I found this one spot in my code where the screen was moving like 3 pixels. But the fact that people were scrolling up and down a lot through my articles, since they're very long, made this shift like a lot over time.
Okay.
I mean, these are like stupid little things that you need to figure out if you have this problem, which is
why. How's a regular person going to figure that out, though?
That's exactly what I'm thinking. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there's the last. I'm not trying to scare everyone listening to this, by the way.
Yeah, I feel like you've done a good job.
There's this one aspect also. Is like when you run like a WordPress site, for example, chances are you have a lot of plugins. This is my opportunity to ask you, Tony, how many plugins you're using for your site.
I have too many, Steve. Yeah. Thank you for asking.
Tony probably has over 20 plugins, right?
Oh, yeah, you were generous there. Thank you.
I know, I was. I know, I have it, yeah. Right? It's like 40.
Yeah, you did.
Every single plugin slows down your site. Every single plugin slows down your site. And this contributes to page speed as well. Like images is probably the biggest thing, but then there's plugins also. And in order to get your page speed fast, what you need to do, there's two things that you can do. One, you can only load up the plugin functionality that you need. So let me just give you a quick example. WordPress by default has this code that does something with your comments so that it can make leaving a comment easier. Well, you don't want to load that code unless someone is ready to leave a comment.
Okay.
Right? So stuff like that. I think now that Google's introduced this, there's more and more tools that will help you do this. But in order to get the absolute best page speed score, if you're anal like I am, like I went for greens across the board, you actually have to manipulate the loading of all of your stuff, all of the plugins that you have in an intelligent manner. And again, I think that's like way over the head of most users. So I think over time, there's probably going to be tools that will help you do this. But for now, at least, it's very difficult.
Okay, so let's just go over. I want
to. Let's go back to the basics, right?
Yeah. So I'm because I feel like some people are like, "Well, screw that. I'm just doing Facebook now." Okay, so if you're new, let's just say you say would be the number one thing that someone should do if they have a website that's under 6 months old to get them on the right track?
Get a keyword tool.
Okay.
100%. You need to be writing about. Well, okay. There's different schools of thought on this also, but you need to be writing. Like, if you want to rank, you need to be writing about what people are searching for.
Yeah.
Bottom line, right? And then, like, the specific keyword, like the exact keyword. Google is pretty intelligent about finding, you know, other keywords, but I was in tech for many years. I'm not a fan of relying on a machine to figure things out. Like, I'd rather just spell it out just to make sure. So use that keyword in your titles and then use all the different permutations and basically put out some content that does not sound like some random writer who didn't know anything about what you're talking about wrote it because they were paid to do so.
Okay. So if you're a newer content creator, I would say get some kind of keyword tool and then using that keyword tool, create this really excellent content that uses all the data that you're finding in the tool.
Create something interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Not just some generic regurgitated stuff where people are just writing a longer post and just writing filler content.
Yeah.
The most interesting content people will actually want to read and share, and they'll stay on your site. And I would say if you're also new and you have the bandwidth, like if you have a YouTube channel already or if you have a podcast or something, it actually also pays to embed all that stuff in your post. Because again, you want people to stay on your post for as long as possible. And if there's a video on there, they're going to stay a lot longer.
Okay, so the next question I have for you, let's just say you have been creating content for a year or two. So you have some traffic, but you know that your search traffic is not where it should be. What would you do if you already, let's say you already have 50 posts on your website.
Okay. If you have 50 posts and you weren't following any of these, are we assuming that they follow these guidelines or they weren't?
We're saying they haphazardly, like they weren't really focused on it.
Yeah. If that's the case, what you need to do is you need to go through each post and figure out using a tool whether it has backlinks or not and whether it's getting any traffic at all. And if it's a post that doesn't have much value, I would consider just removing it and redirecting that to a related post to give strength to a much stronger post. This is something that both Tony and I, we've been doing for a long, long time. I mean, Tony has been doing it longer because you had like thousands of posts, right?
I had 12,000 posts to get started.
Right.
Yeah.
Tony had 12,000 posts. I only had, I think I started out with 1,000 or something.
Like that. Mine was nightmarish.
And I've whittled it down now to about 300 something at this point. But I feel pretty good about the content I have on my site now. And all the bad content, I just redirected to better content. And in some cases, I was able to merge multiple shorter posts that weren't as good into one longer post that was a lot more comprehensive.
I'm still doing that part of it because it's so much work. And I have so many similar posts.
Yeah. I still have a lot too. And in fact, I just did another round of pruning. It was on a much smaller scale. And for me, I don't know about you, but for me, it's actually very difficult to de-index these posts because a lot of these I wrote in the beginning of my journey.
Yes.
And they actually have some meaning to me.
Yes.
You know?
They have emotion in them.
Yes. I don't know what's wrong with you. We keep using the E word. Yeah.
What is wrong?
Yeah.
No, I had that trouble as well because I had a whole section of my website that was just about like stories about my kids. And that needed to come off for a couple of reasons. One, because it wasn't great for SEO, but two, like my kids didn't want that on there anymore because they were little and they thought it was cute. And now they're old and they don't think it's cute. And I actually couldn't bring myself to delete it. So I actually had all those posts migrated to just like a private site. Because
yeah.
I was like, I can't delete this. So this is like a diary, you know, and I know some of your stuff was too, even though it wasn't quite as diary-ish, it still had a lot of stories about your family and stuff in there.
Well, no, it was diary-ish. Is that a real word?
No, but I've made it up.
Where I talked about how I was feeling at the time when I was starting my business, like all the frustrations, all the pain. I mean, it's all in those
back
posts.
In the day when we had feelings. That was the good old days.
Which actually brings me to my next point, right?
Okay.
Like if you are writing, like you can't just write for the search engines.
Right.
You actually, because sometimes you're writing what people search for, but that might not be interesting. Like it's good to get traffic, but at the same time, you also have to retain the existing readers that you have.
Yeah.
So you always have to mix it up with personal stories and philosophies and that sort of thing that aren't really going to rank for anything.
Okay, so that's a middle-aged content creator.
Right.
Let's talk about someone who's been creating content for 10 years, but maybe they've really been focused on social media or even like Pinterest, and they haven't really focused. You would be surprised at how many content creators I meet that got started when Pinterest hit like 2012 and really created a website for Pinterest.
Right.
Heavily image-focused. Really amazing, gorgeous photography, like just next level stuff. But the content itself is not really optimized because Pinterest SEO, you're optimizing what you put on Pinterest SEO wise versus like Google SEO, you're optimizing what's living on your website for the most part.
Right.
That's the biggest difference between the two. So what would you tell someone who maybe they have 1,000 posts, right? Let's just say, and they, you know, maybe they're getting 20% of their traffic from SEO, but they're a 10-year-old website, so they should be able to improve that. What would be like the two things they should do? I mean, I think page speed is probably the first one, right?
Actually, what I would do first is figure out like which posts are ranking.
Yeah.
On like even the fringes. Like we're talking
just
like
cull number, everything else.
No. We're talking like number 10, 11, or 12.
Okay.
And see if I can get those like further up on the front
to
page.
To move up. Okay.
That's what I would start by doing first. And the ones that are just on the fringes too, I would just take a keyword tool and see if I can massage that and target a keyword. Because oftentimes if you're not thinking about that, you're not really targeting any keywords.
Right.
So that's the first thing that I would do. And then I would remove all the junk posts.
Yeah.
And page speed, ironically, I think is something that I would do last. And again, when Google talks about page speed, they're comparing other types of sites of the same
similar
genre.
Similar sites?
Right?
Okay.
So if like all your competitors are slow, then it might not matter as much to you.
Well, and I think in certain niches, like this is, like I say, if you're in a lifestyle site, I bet you everyone's site loads slow.
I bet too.
Except for if you're like Pioneer Woman or Young House Love, people that have like teams working on their site at this point, right? They have a dedicated staff. But I would say if you're in the personal finance space, you better get your site loading quick because those people are all, there's some of those niches are like, that's all they care about, right? They've removed every, like I think about our friend Deacon, who's like has a mild obsession with page load. But like that's that in that space, that is kind of the trend, right? So you kind of have to know the space that you're in and maybe check out your competitor's page speed as well to see where you need to be.
And in a way, like for me, like if I'm teaching this stuff, like my site better be up to snuff too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's aside from search engine optimization. I would also say that if you run an e-commerce store, it needs to feel fast.
Okay.
Right? Because if you're trying to shop and there's money involved, like you better make sure that the experience is good.
Yeah. Total side note, after we finish recording, I need to tell you about I did an entire purchase on Instagram yesterday for the first time ever.
Oh, okay.
It's very interesting.
I don't think I've ever done that. I've never
I haven't either. I haven't either. I'd love to actually like dig into that more at some point, maybe on the podcast or something, have someone who's doing it, because it was actually an amazing user experience.
Okay. Maybe we can get Angela to come in. She's been doing that.
Yeah. So, but anyway, okay. Yeah. Well, I think this has actually been less boring than I thought it was going to be.
Great.
I think there are some real actionable things that people can start doing. I think a little bit is pretty complex, and I don't know how to get people to that point. Really?
Well, I think this is good because whether you're a beginner or advanced, there's probably something in this episode for you, right? And if you guys want to know the secret sauce that took me 4 weeks to figure out, subscribe to this podcast. Tell me you subscribed, and I will answer all of your questions regarding paid speed. Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. Now, for more information about this episode, go to profitableaudience.com/podcast, where we list all of the tools and resources mentioned in our show notes.
And if you enjoyed listening to this episode, please go to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. When you write us a review, it not only makes our day, but it helps keep this podcast up in the ranks so other people can use this information, find the show more easily, and get some awesome business advice.
Leaving a review is by far the best way to support the show. And please tell your friends, because the greatest compliment that you can give us is to provide a referral to someone else, either in person or to share it on the web.
And if you're interested in building your own profitable audience, subscribe to our free 6-day mini course, where we walk you through the exact steps needed to find your niche, build a website, grab email subscribers, and monetize your content. You can sign up at profitableaudience.com/free.
Thanks for listening.